Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io.
What's up, hustlers? This is Andrew Morgans, founder of Marknology, here for today's episode of Startup Hustle, covering all things e-commerce, entrepreneurship, Amazon. We're going to have some fun today talking about what is supplier management. Today's guest, Nat Nguyen, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Andrew.
Yeah, super nice to have you on the show. I think, can you tell the audience where you are today? I know it's 9 p.m. here. Where are you at?
Yeah, it's actually 9 a.m. here. I'm in Ho Chi Minh City, Vietnam. I've just been here since the beginning of this year, really, because our development team is based out of Vietnam. So spending more time with the team here.
I love that. You know, we are a Kansas City-based company. Probably two-thirds or more of our team is here. But, you know, we have many of our team around the globe. So super nice to be talking with you. I hope to make it to Vietnam sooner rather than later. My roommate is half Korean and grew up a third of his life in Seoul and, you know, traveled all over Asia. So he's promised me a trip to Vietnam. He has some friends there. So he's promised me a trip.
I mean, if you're here, let me know. I'll take you a few places for sure.
That'd be awesome. I hear some awesome things. Before we get into your story, one more shout out to today's sponsor for our episode, Fullscale.io, helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. Nat, you know, your company is selected as a top Minnesota startup. I know you're in Vietnam, but you've been selected as a top Minnesota startup. That's incredible. Before we get into that, like, let's back up a little bit. You know, you're in Vietnam now. Like, let's hear a little bit about your story. Where did you get started?
Yeah, definitely. That's a great question. So you know, we started back in middle of 2018.
Okay.
Kind of the idea came around, but like if I back up a few months before that, actually
go a bit further than that, than a few months. Like, did you always know you're going to be an entrepreneur?
I did. You know, I always knew I wanted my own business. But for me, it was really important to make sure that I meet all the family requirements first. So you know, family always wanted you to have a safe job. So I did my accounting degree.
Okay.
I did all my, you know, chartered accountants things and got fully qualified. But eventually after I got my family across to live in Australia, and look like they have already settled in, I decided, look, it's time to take a risk and it's time to go and do what I feel like, you know, it's been my calling for a while. Right.
I love that.
And I mean, that opportunity came quite nicely because I was working at National Australia Bank. You know, I was already in their digital product development team for quite a while. I've been doing a lot of work in their mobile application, deposit, home loans, mobile features. But one great thing about working at a large Australian bank, and some of you guys might be jealous, but you know, I was there and they're like, hey, Nat, you've been doing a good job. Why didn't you take a year off, do whatever you want, come back, same job, same pay. And I was like, where do I sign this deal? Sounds like the best thing I've ever heard.
So they just laid you off for a year, or
it's just by like your career break, right? like a year career break, do whatever you want. Come, you can come back like after a year and we have the same job for you, same pay.
Yeah, forgive me for asking a silly question, but like, did you not have an issue with finances? Like, were you just good to not work for a year at that time? Like,
No. It's, I mean, like the best thing is you can still work for like, you know, as a contract job for. Like,
okay.
Yeah, okay. Right? So like, you know, it's not like, you know, that you can't work for anyone. So of course I had to pick up jobs outside for, in order to be able to travel, right? So I took the year, you know, did like around the world trip and took on jobs as I kind of move around.
Okay.
But really helped me to expand my horizons and really understand what's out there in the world, right? Now, eventually, I ended up in Vancouver, Canada.
Okay.
So for me, Vancouver, Canada, were like, all right, seems like, you know, it's a good place to kind of see if I can find other opportunities. When I landed in Vancouver, you know, continue to look for first like contract job, right? So I was working for a parking management company, doing a lot of their data migration project.
Okay.
So that was a work, but at the same time, I spent my nights, my weekends going to hackathons. Because for me, I really realized like, hey, you know, what's the best way to start this? Because you know, never done this before, right?
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea what to do, but like hackathon seems like where they breed a lot of ideas and you meet like-minded people.
Yeah.
And that's why actually in my second week in Vancouver, I met my co-founder, Lucas. So Lucas, he's my co-founder. He's our COO. He's a guy with a food industry background. So Lucas used to own his own organic food business of exporting organic food out of China to Canada and US. So that's where we met. And, you know, we didn't know each other before the hackathon. And, you know, I still remember we were standing in a circle and, you know, there's like 20 of us. And, you know, somehow we raised our hands together and, you know, formed the team, right? And
yeah.
And when found the team, the first thing is like, you know, what idea should we work on? Like, what's the right thing to do? And you know, I was always open to new things. And when Lucas was telling me his story, and I would love to share that with everybody, the story, because it really resonated with me.
Yeah, please do.
So this is basically, he told me like, Nat, let me tell you something. You know, the consumer today are absolutely different from consumer 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to know not just where their food came from, but they also want to know what happened throughout the entire production process.
Yep.
There's also a lot of more regulation coming through. You know, Food Safety Modernization Act has been in the US for a while. More recently, like, you know, the FDA new food safety era, they're pushing a lot of that. There's a lot of certification. You already got the normal non-GMO organic, but like, you know, just a couple months ago, there's a new like upcycled food certification, right, for any recycled food. So we can see the trend in terms of documentation needs, in terms of like information need for both consumer and regulators only kind of keep increasing. And unfortunately, in his experience, when he told me, like, whenever there's a buyer and a seller of any food product, the buyer would send an email to the seller with, you know, 30, 40 page document telling the seller to fill it out, attach like, more certification and documents back, and the buyer to review it and then approve it. And you can do it for one or two, three interactions, but like when it comes to like hundreds, thousands, like, you know, nobody's just going to spend the time to do all of that. And I found that was super fascinating. Really coming from the financial service industry, I understand the value of digitization and really looking at the food industry, I didn't realize like, you know, that just didn't exist. So for us, like, you know, I saw the vision, like it's first, like, you know, get the infrastructure layer together. But second is like, you know, as we collect this information, we will be able to eventually share it along all the key, you know, food chain players, right? So anyone that needs access to information shouldn't be digging their personal mailboxes to look for it, right? Like we should be able to give it to you at your fingertips. So that's how kind of it started. I was like, dude, let's do it. We found a team that was four of us, we ended up winning that hackathon.
No big deal.
Yeah. It was a 10K cash prize, 10K Canadian cash prize.
Can I ask how old you were at this time? And you just went from accounting, you're like just gonna like figure out to like do programming, right?
Yeah.
Like you kind of just skipped that transition. I'm like, all of a sudden you're winning a hackathon. Like, how did that happen exactly?
Yeah, let me go back. Yeah, I did, as I mentioned, I did started in accounting, but when I was working at the bank, I was already in the digital product development.
Okay.
So I was spending,
you were just learning on the fly at the bank, kind of.
Yeah, I was learning on the fly, like, you know, managing like tech teams, like, you know, working, like, I mean, banking infrastructure is so complex, right? Like, I mean, Oracle stack, all of that is.
Yep.
But I've always been a gamer, right? So if you go gamers, build your own computers and all that, right? So, yep. So like for me, it was exciting to learn all this. It was a lot, but you know, being able to learn on the fly and actually really work, and that's where I really realized that I fell in love with this product role, right? So for me, at the heart,
it's math. It's kind of math based, right? Like it's like programming in general is kind of math logic based. So. Same thing with e-commerce. Like when I kind of found that, I have a gaming background and like grew up with like, I don't want to say my age, but I was young when I was like, you know, with DOS and Windows 3.1 and Windows 95. And like my dad showed me how to build computers. And like, it's helped me in what I do now, even in e-commerce where we sell with search algorithms. Search algorithms and databases can be mapped, you know, and understood and gamified. So I really do feel like to those moms or dads or whoever's listening out there, like, you know, maybe your kids playing a lot of games is a good thing. I don't know. I'm sure you have to have balance. But for me, you know, my familiarity with computers and the systems and the competition of the puzzles was fun. You know, it was fun.
I mean, I'm not sure if you ever had a chance to play World of Warcraft.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. But for me, like even now today, my hiring strategy, if I know someone played well. I asked about the rate experience, is there rate lead and all that. And I can understand the intricacy of like, you know, team composition and you know, doing all of that. It's just amazing, the people with that experience. So I know, you know, to relate a lot more. Yeah.
That's cool. I like that. I've never heard in an interview, like talking to people about games, but maybe it's a great way to go.
Yeah, it's like the strategy, the thinking behind is huge. I mean, that's why esport is on the rise, right?
Yep. I grew up with like Age of Empires and those like, you know, the StarCraft and like the strategy games. Like, you know, I grew up in Africa, and there was times, it sounds kind of crazy, but it was crazy. I was probably 13 and was, you know, you still had to hardwire network computers. Like there was no like Wi-Fi and shit like that, right? So you're hardwiring everything. You need a gateway. You need some kind of high-end software. It's probably $1,000 that I'd hacked already to have because I was a kid. You know, and I was playing with mercenaries, legitimately, like playing Age of Empires with like three or four of us. They were just like, these are expat guys that were nice to me as a teenager. And they were like, hey, can you come help network our computers? I'm like, sure. My dad was like adventurous. He's like, sure, go help them, you know? Like, so I was helping them and I would come over and we'd play like, you know, three or four player, like Age of Empires or StarCraft back in the day. And looking back at it, I'm just like, as a kid, the ability to like play a strategy game with like warriors at some level, you know, some of them were pilots, some of them were different positions. They all worked like for the government there. But, being able to play and strategize with them. And, you know, that's what we can do now when we're online. It just didn't exist back then, but like playing online and, you know, playing against, you got kids against adults. And it's crazy what, you know, kind of your brain is doing at that time if you're trying to be good at it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I have full respect for very competitive players with their RPMs, right? The micromanagement is huge, right? Like,
yeah. Exactly. Like the amount of tasks you're doing at the same time is insane. And I didn't really realize that. I didn't think of that as a skill until much later in life. Like, I guess as my awareness grew, it was just like, wow, like I really think doing these things like helped me reverse engineer puzzles and problems in my business and, you know, things like that. But okay. I feel like we derailed a little bit. I want to get back to it. So you meet your partner, Luke, correct?
Yeah. Lucas.
Okay, Lucas, you guys win the hackathon, you get 10K. And
yeah, I was in my second week in Vancouver. Can you imagine that? My second week.
Okay, so I heard, like, I have a friend here in Kansas City, Joel Goldberg. He tells me that Vancouver has the most beautiful women in the world. Is that why you stopped there? He's like, I don't know. No, that's just what I heard. He's a baseball announcer and went there for with the Royals, and he always tells me, like, because I'm a Canadian. I'm a dual citizen. I was born in Montreal, so so I, you know, we've talked about Canada. I need to go up there with some time when the team's visiting. He said you got to go to Vancouver. Vancouver is where it's at. So
yeah. I mean, it was very progressive, right? As you know, like, you know, go on the street, you can kind of feel everything, and it's a super vibrant like city and multicultural. It honestly, because I spent most of my life in Melbourne, Australia, right?
And okay,
when I went to Vancouver, it felt like home, and it's no different. So yeah,
Okay, so you're there. It's your second. That wasn't your second hackathon in 2 weeks, was it? That was no, just.
It's my second hackathon in 2 weeks, actually. Yeah, I went to one of them before the week.
Okay. And the second one you win.
Yeah. Well, I mean, before that, I've been to plenty in Australia, and I didn't win any. So it's not like, you know, I've been doing this, like, I was working at the bank, but I was still continue to do hackathons in the
weekend.
Like, so I've still been doing all that for a few years now. And, you know, just, you know, after a lot of time trying, finally, I got to one that I won, right? And it was exciting. You know, of course, winning hackathon is one thing, but really having a company is an entirely different thing, right? Like, you know, for me, like, okay, we won. Okay, so what's the next steps, right? I mean, we're doing a product that is for, you know, food producers. So we have to go out and find food producers who might say, like, hey, this is a cool thing. I want to use it, right? Because without customers, you have no business, as you know, right? so that's why, you know, for me, at that stage, you know, everyone was super excited, but for me, it was like, okay, next steps. Need to find someone who will believe in this, and I didn't know how. I mean, you know, a second week in a new country, had nobody. But then I realized, like, hey, let's use meetups. Like, let's go to different, like, food meetups, and maybe we'll find someone who might be interested around this. So I went to different ones, and one of them I went to it's funny, it's like a keto group. But they invited like a beef producer to that to talk about like, you know, organic beef and your beef production process and things like that. I was like, all right, well, let's go and, you know, chat to the speaker afterwards, right? And so, you know, we end up meeting, and, you know, her name was Barbara, and she was super nice, and, you know, she understood technology, and she was like, all right, let's try it, let's give it a try, see how it goes, and that's kind of how our first pilot started, just a couple of weeks after that hackathon. Kept moving there, and that, like, you know, for me was like, hey, okay, you know, looks like there's actually some like real life use case that can be applied, and from that, that's when I realized that, all right, so I mean, I continue to work on my contract job full time, and all this work still happening in the background as part time, right? Like, you know, with my team at that point still, and Lucas, and sorry, one thing I forgot to mention about Lucas, but he's amazing. He's a Brazilian guy, but he's been in Canada for like 7-8 years.
Okay.
So, like, you know, my first experience working with Brazilians, you know, but I don't know, Lucas and I work like quite well together, and, you know, have like, you know, that's how we can work out. And I'll be honest, like, UltraFi wouldn't be today if it was just by myself. Because, like, doing a startup by yourself is tough, right? And you really need a strong team around you, and you know, Lucas is definitely one of those people that, you know, would be great to have as my co-founder.
Well, that's good advice, and you know, kind words for your partner. So not all partnerships work out, you know, but I do feel like whether it's a partnership or a team, either way, you need a strong team around you. Even if you're a solopreneur, whether that's your family or your friend group, you're not going to be able to do it if you're not surrounded by people that are supporting you. I truly believe that, like, there's only so much you can do on your own. You might be able to build something that's paying you, but to build a business that's, you know, scalable and that's, you know, going to do big things, I think, like, it's a must to have a great team. Okay. So Lucas from Brazil in Canada. Wow. You guys link up, international team. I love it. Like, you know, a lot of my friends, I'm from Kansas City, but grew up in Africa. A lot of my friends are all international or from abroad. There's a connection that I have with people that have just lived abroad that's just different than, you know, people that haven't traveled. So, your team, was your team immediately in Vietnam at that time, like when you were developing that project?
No, that was all basically just, you know, the hackathon team, right?
Okay, okay.
Together, we were working, like, you know, developing, like Lucas was also developing. He actually, even though he owned the food business, but he was like, hey, he knew that he saw technology need to be applied. So he went to the coding boot camp and, you know, really be able to start picking.
That's up crazy. That's very admirable. That's very admirable.
Yeah. So really, like, and I'm from a tech background, so I did all the DevOps. So I did all the deployment on AWS and all of that, right? So, like, I also picked that up from YouTube videos, right? So doesn't matter for us, like, here at UltraFi, said at that stage, you're like, everyone have to do everything, right? There's no clear cut. Like, you only do tech, you only do sales. Like, everybody do everything.
Yep.
Anything you can do to get things going, because we all at that time working part-time, this is like a side project, right? I mean, and for me, like, you know, I didn't want to keep taking people's time because, you know, it really important, like, you know, people need to resonate and feel. So for us, I kept taking the team to do more competition. Because, like, you know, for me, like, you know, the first one win is great. It proved that we can work together once. But let's repeat this model, right? Let's make sure that this team actually works well. And we keep going to different competition. We, like, won another pitch at North Shore from Vancouver Startup Week. Won that as well. So gave more validation and I got more context. And just kind of start growing and seeing the momentum the team can actually do it. And as I
said, did you keep doing the same software or were you guys like developing new projects?
It was the same idea. Because like I want to validate the idea as well. Right? I want the users. I want to make sure like your people resonate with this and you know see that interest. And so you know I eventually found okay, you know, it's a good time.
Were you guys winning money as well?
There were money or were like in kind where like you know there's one pricing for us was like you get like a marketing consultant coming in and figure out your branding and all that together.
Okay. Okay.
There's some competition, but money as well. Like when we got third prize, and I'll get to this one in just a second. For me, it was like, hey, how do we figure out a way to raise money, right? Like because we from day one, I know I wanted not just a business, I want a fast growing business at this tech base that is exciting, and the pathway of raising money has to be there, right? And that's gonna for me it's gonna be a trigger to tell my entire team like quit your day job, we're doing this full time, because before that it's really hard to tell people to do that, right?
Yep.
So for me, right, how do I do that? Then I was like, yeah, okay, it seems like you know gotta go find places where investors usually congregate or you know people who are likely to kind of invest would be there, and conferences were like the first thing in mind. And for me, I was like, all right, let's go to conferences. But like, I mean, conferences tickets are expensive. Like, I don't want to pay. Because like all my money I want to be spending on my product, on my servers. So I was like, you know what, let's see if anyone looking for speaker spots, panel spots. Because like, I mean, I've been winning competitions and like, you know, seems like there's a resonation in the story. So why don't I apply for that? And you know, this conference in Dallas back in the, it was October 2018. And the you know, initial ticket price was like $2,000. And I was like, yeah, I'm not going to pay for that. But then I found that they're looking for speakers. So they're like, all right, you know, we're looking for speakers. Can you send us your white paper? And then, you know, we'll see if you should speak at our conference. And at that point, I did not have a white paper.
Right.
I just started. Like, I'm not going to write a white paper. But the lucky thing is that, like, you know, the first round, they're just going to tell me, like, hey, you just send your abstract to start, right? Don't worry about it. I was like, yeah, abstract, I'll write it in.
Got it.
And so I wrote the abstract, sent it through. They read the abstract, they loved it. They're like, hey, we love it. And well, we'd love to have you come and speak, but we ran out of speaker spots and we only have panelist spot left. And I was like, okay, panelist spot. Wait, does that mean I don't have to write the paper? And they're like, yeah. So I was like, great, yeah, I'm coming in.
I love it, that's genius.
And that's how the startups kind of works, right? Like you kind of find this.
What was the conference? What was it for?
It was Hedera Hashgraph 2018. It was a blockchain conference.
Okay.
You know, it's a new kind of blockchain tech. We did kind of initially had some tech in blockchain, and we still have that endpoint to ever want to go back into that. But for now, you know, our main core tech is still the AI machine learning that we invest most of our functionality on. But yeah, so you know when we went there, and I also asked for tickets for my team as well. Like I mean, they had a conference and a hackathon at the same time. So I was like, all right, everyone gets a ticket. Let's go down there and compete. And they also had like investor pitch, and all of that. So we you know, went down there, competed. That's when we won third prize. So then we got like you know some cash money, also some like you know. Tokens, like you know, so yeah,
like Bitcoin tokens.
No, it was a Hedera token. So like,
okay.
But still, like I mean,
yeah,
so the value still increased together with Bitcoin anyway. So you know, it's when we like really kind of for us was like I was trying to solve the problem because I saw the real life problem. But you know how you know doesn't matter what mean to get to solve that problem. I was happy to kind of figure out right. And so then when we got down there, I pitched to investors as well, and you know luckily we you know got one investor that was interested right there at that conference who was like, hey guys, you know want to invest and you know support you in all of this. But the thing is, like, we're all first-time founders. We've never done this before. And so I was telling the team, it's okay, you know, he's cool, but, you know, keep doing what we're doing until we sign a term sheet, I think, like that, right? And so, you know, we went back to Canada, and Lucas was looking for a new job, and, like, we were all working, and then on the first day of Lucas' new job, he came in and was like, all right, guys, we just signed the term sheet, and Lucas is like, yep, hi, everyone, thanks for the new laptop, but it's also my last day. It became a story we all quit the day we signed the time sheet.
I love that. That's awesome. Can I ask how much the investment was, the first investment?
Yeah, the first investment was just $100K. You
know, okay.
For us to kind of really believe that, hey, we can get investment. And I think, like, you know, the value of the investment was not as much as the network of people that we then got introduced to after that, right? Like, the other startups are part of that same network that we learned from, startup from all over the world, from Silicon Valley, from, you know, even like Asia areas, and the mentors that we met after that as well, that really let us like hear their experience to learn for ourselves and know what's the right thing to do in this kind of environment, right?
Yeah.
So that was key. But having said that though, like, you know, it, like Ultrafy as a company didn't really fully take off until we eventually, as we continue to develop that first product and when that won the hackathon, we actually continue to see different markets and we knew that we wanted to be in the US.
Okay.
We knew we wanted to be like agricultural food. US is the biggest kind of economy for that, and in terms of, like, you know, regulation is also huge, right? So we knew we wanted to be in US. So we continue to apply for accelerators in the US, and for us, we eventually got into Techstars. I'm not sure if you're
okay. I'm very familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. So we got into Techstars Farm to Fork for us. So that was middle 2019. So, you know, at that point we're like, yep, everyone moved to St. Paul, Minnesota. That's where we
hit. Damn, everyone moves. Everyone packs up their shit, closes their leases.
Well, stays. Like, it's just the founders, right? Like, it's just the founders.
Okay.
Because the rest of the team, in terms of developers, we have developers in Vietnam, but, you know, that has always been from day one because I speak fluent Vietnamese. I'm Vietnamese myself. I knew that, you know, I can get the strong team here and be able to build that up and support our operations.
Did you have like a relationship? Did Lucas have a relationship? Did you just leave it behind? Was it temporary? Like, that's the real shit that we want to hear.
Yeah. that's actually a really good question. Yeah. For me, it was definitely a lot more complicated, and, you know, getting this is going to be tough. But for Lucas, he was in a long term relationship.
Okay.
He was in a long term relationship, and I also, like, hopefully you have a chance to talk to him one day, and he definitely will tell you. But it was a difficult time for both of us. I think, you know, with what I can tell you, we're definitely not in the same relationship status as we were when we first started.
Yep.
There we are now. So
that's what I assumed. You know, I've been an entrepreneur for a minute, and I've learned a lot of lessons, you know, so I knew some of that had to be there. And that's the stuff that doesn't get told, you know. Sometimes to chase your shit, to chase your dreams, you have to make some really hard decisions, you know. Yeah. And ones that will change your life forever. And you just have to know what you want with absolute focus, or, you know, you're not going to be successful. So, I mean, I just think that's big. I think that's big. So, you guys make the move, the founders make the move. And, you know, one thing I've been thinking about the whole time is that someone that's worked in the e-commerce space, and like we sell on Amazon Canada, we're in 11 different Amazon, markets. So, you know, Japan, UK, Germany, France, Canada, Mexico, like, you know, you name it. Regulation in Canada is strict. So, you know, having some background, in my opinion, like navigating Canadian, like, food regulation, is more difficult than even the US. I don't know if things got easier when you went to St. Paul and started developing the software for there, but, like, from what I know, it seems to be quite a bit easier here.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, Lucas can tell you all about this. He had terrible time getting his import-export licenses across with the government agencies, right, and all of that. And for us, though, like, you know, that's a problem that we do want to address eventually. But right now, when we're working, we actually build UltraFi up as a tool to kind of just help people do what they already have to do a lot faster and a lot easier, right? So we understand the regulation, but you know, each company likes to handle regulation in different ways. And for us, it's about how do we build UltraFi tool in terms of being flexible enough so that each country can, the users can cater the tool to handle their own things, right?
So, okay. That's what I was curious about, I guess, a little bit of the functionality and just like changing from Canada to the US, like if that changed a lot of the ways you had built the software or not, but it seems like not.
Yeah, well, I mean, like the funny thing is like any startup, you know, we always go through a pivot, right? And the pivot went when we went through the TechStars program. Right?
Okay.
The TechStars program, we really, you know, had the opportunity to talk to a lot of major food manufacturers in the Midwest. So we were talking to people from Cargill, from Trans, from Enolex, Sanofta, General Mills, and all of those, right? And we really then shift our focus to realize that, hey, actually, the middle of the supply chain, those food manufacturers have the most pain points, right? Like they have biggest issues because our initial product was working with a beef producer, but was like a fully integrated supply chain.
Yep.
So product was working well for the fully integrated supply chain, but then we realized like, hey, that doesn't, it's not good reflection of the entire world. Like if we there's not that many food production or any manufacturing production that is fully integrated, right? There's always going to be players going to go in between. And when we realized that, like, all right, actually, we need to change our product to really about, like, helping buyer and seller to communicate a lot better, right? And you know, really focus on the middle of the supply chain where, you know, a manufacturer might have, like, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of suppliers that they have to deal with.
Yeah.
And that's where we pivot the product. So actually, we scrap that entire product. We sunset the old product that we used to use for the fully integrated supply chain,
and also the product that had won the hackathons, right?
That's right.
Like, so was that a big move? Like, I mean, like trashing that in a sense, like a lot of stress, right? Like this is the thing that's had you win at least 3 hackathons, and you're gonna start completely over.
Yeah, it was, and the thing is like. And we wouldn't have been able to make that move. Like, you know, when we went through the TechStars program, the first 3 weeks, we spoke to 100 mentors. So you can imagine the amount of conversation I went through in that short amount of time and the amount of data we had to process. But, you know, it was great because it helped us. You know, a decision could have taken, like, 6 months was done in 3 weeks, essentially. Right? Because, like, for us, it's all about, like, how do we collect data quite quickly, synthesize this, and go down and make a decision for the business, right? And it was tough. I don't know. You know, seeing the data point, I'm like, yeah, okay, I have to make this call and, you know, forget about the baby that I've been working on for over a year now, right? Since middle of 2018 to middle of 2019.
Was the beef company using the software at the time?
Yeah, so they definitely were interested, but they're still early, at the early stage, right? We're still testing out a few things, and they still want to use it. But, you know, for us, we had to have a conversation, right? We had a conversation, hey, we unfortunately can't support this anymore, and so we have to kind of find a new direction for our company, because otherwise, even if we try to support you, like we don't see the potential growth that we would can potentially get to be a sustainable business, right? Like, I mean, at the end of the day, what you want to do as a tech is eventually build it into a sustainable business where we can see the revenue coming in, and you know, the value you drive for your customer has to be proportionally higher, right? And that's a key for any business to operate. So for us, we just found like, you know, the cost of operation was way higher than the value we could actually drive for the beef business initially we were working with.
Well, it's obviously a good decision knowing that you're like ranked one of the top, you know, St. Paul startups or Minnesota startups. So obviously it worked out. Before we go into that part of the story, I just want to give one more shout out to today's sponsor for our episode, Full Scale. Helping you build software teams quickly and affordably. We talked about Nat's team being in Vietnam. The Full Scale team is, I believe, based out of the Philippines. If you're looking to scale a software team, there's no one else better in the game. They're fantastic. Check them out, fullscale.io. Nat, back to you. You know, we're talking about trashing the software, having the conversation with the beef manufacturer. You're at Techstars in Minneapolis 3 weeks in. You've talked to 100 mentors. What's going through your mind?
Yeah. So at that point, it's like, you know, no product. How I go back to square one as just when I just finished a hackathon, right? What can I do? What is the right thing to do here? And for us, it's like, all right, now we kind of identified and narrowed down the pain point. Sits with specifically the quality assurance professional, different food manufacturers. So, you know, it became my mission. Like, what can I do to make the life of quality assurance professionals easier? Right? Like, you know, at the end of the day, the product have to make these people's life easier, have to help them in their everyday job. And, you know, then at the same time, we'll be collecting the right information to then eventually share with the kind of food traceability kind of vision, right? But,
okay.
But like, you know, food traceability, everyone talks about it. It's a big thing. But like for me, I really broke it down to first need to make sure that we're no longer using emails and Excels to manage all of this before we can actually achieve that, right? Because like, you know, you can achieve food traceability on a small scale manually, but like on a large scale, when the vision we see Ultrafire to be, we have to do it through automatic means, right? To like automation. So then, all right, then we kept talking to different quality assurance professionals, you know, really understanding their processes, their pain points, you know, rank them, you know, ask them to rank things and we created a clickable prototype, right? Like, I mean, that's the first thing you want to do. Like, you know, okay, this is a whole new product. Here's where you click. Here's what you see when you click. And we took that back to them as like, hey, you know, if I build this product, is that something you're going to use? And, you know, fortunately, one of this lady we're working with, Crystal from Cargill Protein Division, she was amazing, really kind of shared with us her background. And we actually went visit her. She's in Wichita. So,
you okay. know, that's close. Here, right? Yeah.
Lucas and I actually drove from St. Paul across from to Kansas and to Wichita, like that entire road trip.
That's a good trip.
And yeah, Lucas drove the whole time. So, you know, so went down and, you know, really be able to kind of see the needs, and, Crystal, was like happy to help, to sign a letter of intent between us and Cargill to say that, hey, if you guys build this, we're going to pilot with you using this product. And that was huge for us. I mean, like, you know, we got to St. Paul in July, middle of July, August, we pivot, 2 months later, we got a prototype and got a letter of intent signed, like one of the largest food manufacturers in the world. Right. Like, I was like, oh my God, this is crazy.
That's the power of Techstars in a way, right?
Like, this is the power of Techstars. And so, you know, right away, put the team together in Vietnam. You know, the initial team I had kind of had to stop because that's old product. You know, we kind of changed a lot. So, you know, put together a full time team in Vietnam now. And start coding the product together. And we were able to release the first beta version of it in February, right? That's 4 months later. So just like, you know, for us from day one has been like the speed is really important. I continue to hope. Because none of us had the quality assurance background. And so for me, from day one, I know like the only way to build a good product is to get it into the hands of quality professionals who are using it every day and talk to them and get feedback and constant feedback and keep reiterating and keep building it, right? And so that's why, you know, that's what I did. I was like, yep, got out in February, started a pilot with Cargill in March, essentially protein division, right? And then you know, that was just great to kind of get it in the user's hands. But we didn't stop there, right? I mean, that's one company. We continue to keep going and work with other companies. So, you know, another company that we ran a pilot with was Camps. They also, you know, a dairy manufacturer. So for us, that's where we realized that, hey, from day one, we proved that when we built this product, we wanted to work across different product type, different jurisdiction, doesn't matter, because you got one protein, beef, pork, poultry, and then the other one, you got like ice cream, dairy product, right?
What are the different things that will come up that's different, right? Like, what are the hiccups?
Yeah, and then like, we were able to use the same platform, right? Which was great. Like, that's like, okay, cool. We've proven that. Doesn't matter what your product type is, as long as you manufacture it, like, you know, you'll be able to use Ultrafire.
I'm going to stop you just for a second because from my own experience and my own model, like, I've been helping brands on Amazon, right? And I've worked with over 300 brands since I started. And that was a big part of my the methodology that we've developed in regards to managing brands has been trial and error. And just like, I need to work with brands. I've launched supplement brands. I've launched food brands. I've launched clothing brands. I've launched car part brands. I've launched sex toys. I've launched anything you can think of, like legitimately 300 different product types for the most part. And it's just developed over time. And it's like, what worked with this brand? Why didn't it work with this brand? And then, you know, for Amazon, I think it's a lot different than a lot of other marketplaces in that, you know, as far as marketing companies go, usually they have a niche. And so, you know, if they're a marketing or an advertising agency, they work with beauty or cosmetics, or they work with, apparel, or they work with consumables, right? Or, and that's their world. That's everyone they know. They know how to sell food. That's their thing. And I think that Amazon kind of changed that. Like for me, it's been, I need to know how to story tell, and I need to know Amazon, but I don't need to know everything about skincare or beauty or how that entire market works. Like I understand the Amazon algorithm. And so when we started realizing that our methodology would apply to any type of product that we were selling, that was when the light bulb really went off as like, this is a repeatable thing. Mm-hmm. And sure, you still need the branding and the storytelling and a quality product to be successful. But if you do these things on this platform, you will be successful. I don't have to be a marketing genius for every brand that we touch. That was a big moment for us. So just relating that to when you worked with the second one or the third one where you're like, this is a completely different product and it's working. Is that where you guys were really building confidence kind of in what you guys were doing?
That's right. And for us, that was like really helped us to say like, okay, we're on the right track. Let's keep doing what we're doing, right? Like, and as any entrepreneur, you continue to need to see validation through your journey, right?
Yep.
Like, I mean, you can't keep going if you don't see these validations. And so for us, you set your mind. Lucas and I set our milestones, right? Like, you know, we need to achieve this within this period of time. This is where the results we want to see, you know, additional clients, additional product development, like more capability expansion. Right? And if we don't hit that, then ask question, why is it not happening? Is we're doing something wrong, or, you know, it's just not the right thing, right? Because like, you know, from after that first pivot, once you go to a pivot, you really see the power. Like, always on the lookout if you need to pivot again.
Yep.
And so that always keeps us on our toes.
You want options. I think that's like, you know, to just talk about that pivot is like, I think I have a post on Instagram where I just kind of like laid it out there. I was word vomiting, but I just talk about the art of the pivot. And, you know, you can be way less talented, or you can be, you know, way less backed or supported. But if you're really good at the pivot and you set yourself up to be able to pivot by not putting yourself in a corner, you know, like I own a property management company as well, an Airbnb company. And with all of our Airbnbs, if something's to happen, like a neighbor goes crazy or the city changes the laws or any number of things happen, we can easily pivot into just a traditional rental because we've only gotten ourselves in situations where that makes sense, right? That's just like an easy example. But once you understand kind of how much, like, I guess, growth you can get with a good pivot, in the right direction, you know, like all the businesses that pivoted for me during the pandemic, it was exciting here in Kansas City in some ways to see the businesses that truly had entrepreneurs still running them, and see those entrepreneurs like adapt and pivot and come up with new solutions and new ways to like stay in business. I felt kind of like invigorated by that. Like I was like kind of just watching all these businesses come up with genius ideas or change their manufacturing from alcohol to, you know, sanitizer or different things like that. And just be like, you know, that's genius. The pivot. I love it. Like it's one of my favorite topics just because I think that if you get, regardless if you're a startup or a 100-year-old business, like if you get just too stuck and you can't think of alternate ways to stay in business, it's just a matter of time until you're done. So,
So
you learn the pivot early and you're like, okay, now I'm trying to always have something in my back pocket.
Yeah, that's right. So yeah, well, you know, and for us, like, you know, really going deep into continue developing our product, right? Like, you know, so for us, like, you know, getting the initial kind of work from the policy assurance professional is only step one, right? Like, I mean, the core of our product is still going to be all our investment, all the work that we've done into, you know, AI machine learning, and more specifically, our optical character recognition and our natural language processing, where you know, if you imagine all, like you work in e-commerce, you know that, you know, when they interact, it's usually email with PDFs. There's a lot of PDFs out there, you know, audit reports or whatever to show to as proof, right? And we will not never be able to read the industry of those, because that's just the way people are so used to be able to interact with each other. But that means that if there's a document, somebody has to read it, right? If you think about it, like in the food industry, there's a lot of different certification, like organic, non-GMO, and one product can have 5-10 different certifications, and each of them expire at a different time in the year, right? Like manually managing it over thousands of product lines, how do you do that? And for us, that's where we can invest a lot into like really a capability where we automatically extracting the expiration date and automatically, you know, setting out those reminders to the suppliers, like, hey, please update your certification so that the business, the manufacturer can always be compliant. And that's what, you know, the topic, right? What is supply management? Supply management in this case is make sure they always meet the compliance standards, because the regulations are only increasing. And how do we do that a lot more efficiently and a lot more effectively? Without having to waste amazing talent, because what we see is like most of these food producers, or I think even other manufacturers, initially when the regulation wasn't around, they just didn't have this role, right? And then suddenly regulations that are coming up, they have to pull like, you know, food scientists or like, you know, amazing people who would be doing some other things with the product to do this compliance work, because like, you know, no one else, like, you know, there's no university that will teach like, you know, supply management and document management, right? So you pull all great talent, and for us it's like, how do we reduce the manual work that these talents are doing so that they can focus more on the core product that they're working on for the company? And, you know, from our pilots, we already saw like, you know, 40% efficiency gain based on some of our existing functionality, which is just amazing to see, like, the amount of time reduced that they need to worry about things. Then, you know, we also see the potential as we continue to develop. Like one more thing that we have on the horizon is our natural language processing. So, okay. You know, so far we've been talking a lot about like, you know, the buyers need to get a lot of information from the suppliers, right? But you think about it, suppliers sell to so many customers. Yep. And imagine if every single customer had to send a different form that you had to fill out. Now think about the effort that you have to go through to do that, right? And for us, like, you know, we're leveraging the natural language processing to understand the intent of different questions being asked by different buyers and help the suppliers to pre-populate. And they only need to check that we did it correctly. And that's, in turn, they will train our algorithm to be even better as well, right? So then for us, that's where we really see the value. It's not just for one side, but the entire food chain as a whole. And that's where the UltraFi network effect really comes into play strongly, because once you've got like, you know, a buyer, all their suppliers are using it, the suppliers start working with their customers, then one day they'll be like, oh, actually, I want to manage my own suppliers the same way. So you go to another step of that food chain or any other supply chain, right? I mean, right now we focus on food chain because we really strongly believe in that's the most necessary thing that to be working on first. And so as we go to different steps of that food chain, we eventually go to the very beginning, right? And also on the other side, we go to the end. And that's where, you know, the vision of that achieving that, you know, food traceability, food safety, you know, UltraFi vision is to become that source of truth for all the food safety, food history information.
I love that.
And that's how we're going to achieve it. And then, you know, the story at that point won't be just about, you know, operational efficiency. The story is going to be about, like, you know, what is the biggest thing that can kill any food manufacturing business, right? Like a food
getting scarcity. Sanctions or something, right? Like, yeah.
But like, how do you prevent that from happening if you don't know what's going on with your supply chain and, you know, all the data is all over the place, right? You just can cross your fingers and hopefully no one do anything wrong. But
right.
You have access to that data and you can kind of do a lot more scrutinies and be able to do a lot more safeguarding to protect your business, right? So,
no, so, yeah. I love that, Nat. I think we could keep going on all night, but I have to wrap us up close to the 50-minute mark. Tell you know, our listeners where they can find more information about your company. You know, if we have anyone that this type of software would be a great fit for, are you on LinkedIn? You know, what's your website address? I'll have it in the show notes, but just for anyone listening in the car, can you share some of that information?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm on LinkedIn. You can find me, Nat Nguyen. I think there's going to be a lot of Nat Nguyen around. So maybe LinkedIn will be hard, but like, you know, you can email me nat@ultrafi.com. So nhat@ultrafi.com. Our website, ultrafi.com, is always accessible. You can request a demo. You know, the companies that we're looking for right now and that working can find working really well are, you know, any food manufacturers that, you know, have to manage over like 50 or 100 suppliers in the portfolio. Because like if you only have five, like we don't recommend you use the software just yet. But if you're seeing yourself growing and really fast, mm-hmm. and get content, then totally reach out. We'd love to set up a demo, have a chat with you guys and see if we can help your operations. Because you know, for us, we care about how you work. And if we see that we cannot help, then you know, we probably won't be able to help. And we'll let you know, that's the honesty, right? So. But if we think that we can, then we'll show you how we think, and you can make a decision if we should be able to help with your operations. So yeah, that's us. And you know, there's a lot of case studies on our website. We did a case study with Camps. Feel free to have a look at the website and our case studies there and see how they use Ultrafi to improve their operations.
I love it. It's super innovative. Nat, your story is incredible. I know you're just getting started. If you started in 2018, you're 3 years in. So can't wait to see what you're doing and follow your story. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. Once again, shout out to our sponsor for today's episode, Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Thank you, hustlers. We'll see you next time. Nat, thanks for being on the show.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. Thank you, Andrew.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time. We do it.